Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Welcome to the Escape Pod. Hello, Joe.
Mark, good afternoon. And Mark as well. And we've got our special guest, Canadian Dave, in the studio.
Hello. Yes, we do. Hello.
How are you?
Good morning. Welcome to the Escape Pod, Joy 94.9. We've got a great show today. You probably just heard of if you were a loyal Cravings listener. Mm-hmm. We have a whole team full of people in today. It's going to be a fantastic ride. Canadian Dave.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You were pride trotting all around Europe, weren't you?
I was, yes. A couple months ago now, but yes, I was.
Yeah, but we're still clutching at our seats waiting to hear all about it.
Yes, I've been holding my breath the whole time.
And it's been such a warm Saturday afternoon. I mean, goodness gracious, spring is in the air. It's time to start thinking about racewear, I think.
Fascinators. And
it's just
above.
A suit, right?
Yeah, it is just a suit with a dash of silk. It's that dash of silk that makes the difference.
I'll go out and buy the silk just for the occasion.
Excellent, especially if you're the jockey.
It's required, isn't it, I think?
It is most definitely. It is the uniform du jour. So what's been happening this week, gentlemen?
Mark, you go.
I've started to think about, this is a travel show, right? So it's all about travelling, I think. Yeah.
And let's travel to the election polls because you are right onto this, like a proverbial on the proverbial.
I don't know if I want to go there. I maybe plan my trip to get away from Australia.
can you just remind us of that website that you mentioned on TechnoGaze? We've had other people call in and ask for it again. They really want to see where they fit on that whole preference paradigm.
I need to find there's belowtheline.org.au, which is a site that helps you choose your preferences if you want to vote below the line in the Senate, which is a massive thing this time around since there's so many.
Right. Is it nearly a metre long? Is that, have I heard correctly, the piece of paper?
And that's an Anthony Green, famed, numbers guy at the ABC. He's done a bit of a rant this week about how stupid it's going to be to fill out the Senate paper and how
96.
Hard it is. Yes, and how hard it is to understand the preferences. Like, if you do want to vote above the line, how hard it is going to be to actually choose the party that suits your preferences accordingly.
So trying to work that out is actually going to send your mind into another paradigm.
Yes. Yes. There's another website that we mentioned. I'm trying to find the link to it.
While you're poking away at your iPad, let's talk pride. Let's talk travelling to pride all around Europe.
Yes.
And also the Middle East. So where was your first pride moment on your trip?
The first pride moment on the trip. So we did. We went through Hong Kong, Tel Aviv, Stockholm, Berlin, Lisbon, Amsterdam. Bit of a whirlwind trip. And in terms of landing in some of these destinations during the actual pride festivities, it was really only Tel Aviv and Berlin. We were there for the official events.
Okay. Yeah.
Which would be pretty amazing, I suspect.
Like,
I only really get to experience pride events here in Australia at most.
Yes.
Like two other cities to actually see that. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
And Tel Aviv, what's that like? Is it?
Well, Tel Aviv is very surprising. So, I mean, I get for the Middle East, I wasn't sure what to expect for a pride. I mean, I thought the fact that they had a pride festival full stop was quite impressive. So I was interested to see what it was all about. But, I mean, the event itself. So we came in the week before the pride parade. Mm. So they had a week-long just events at different bars and clubs and restaurants, little bits and bobs throughout the week. A few dance parties, things like that. And then the actual parade itself kicks off in the center of town in a square that has an LGBT community center and a few things like that. So they had a few speeches, some performances and things like that. Yeah. And then tens of thousands of people, march through the parade through the center of Tel Aviv. Now, like in terms of, you know, relating it to maybe Sydney Mardi Gras or something like that, the parade itself was all, had great energy and things like that. And in terms of the spectacle, didn't really match, you know, something like Sydney Mardi Gras.
Sure.
But the thing that really blew me away about Tel Aviv Pride is once it got to the beach, Gordon Beach, it went off. Like there were just tens of thousands of people occupying the entire beach area. And it was like, you know, the music festivals you see here in Australia in terms of grandstands and just, yeah, I couldn't believe that the scale of the event
right.
in a Middle Eastern country. Yeah.
So Dave, there are other large-scale events that are struggling at the moment. You think of corporate shows, conferences, trade shows, even, you know, our beloved event like a motor show for the consumer.
Yep.
How are Pride events going? Do you think they are actually building in terms of their support, or do you think they're also having a struggle with sponsorship and ticket sales and things like that?
Yeah. Look, from what I could tell, I mean, one of the things that struck me, particularly in Tel Aviv, again, just with, I guess, my preconceptions of what it would be and the people that would be there, it was a very mixed crowd. You could see, you know, hetero couples with children there and things like that. So it was sort of the general populace that were being a part of it. So it was more of just a community event, as opposed to sort of more of an LGBT niche affair. So that was interesting to see. In terms of sponsorships and things like that, didn't really get an opportunity aside from a spectator perspective to kind of delve into it. So I was just a happier participant in the events. But I mean, they were booming. The Berlin one in particular too was very overwhelming.
Okay, so the Berlin one has probably a little bit more of a risque
yes.
component than maybe Tel Aviv.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair to say.
When was Tel Aviv? It couldn't be on the weekend because of Shabbat, right?
Yeah, so it was the actual parade was during the day on the Friday.
Right, before Shabbos.
Before Shabbos, yes, okay. Correct. Yeah,
and I guess they don't have as many limitations in Berlin, which is a city that has been known for interesting take on sexuality
absolutely.
And expression for a very long time.
Definitely.
And so what was the main thing that struck you between Berlin and Tel Aviv?
Probably, I mean, just that they had definitely had that fetish element that was out and proud, as opposed to, I mean, Tel Aviv is very liberated and very open in terms of, you know, affection and all the rest of it. That was, you know, right up in front. But with Berlin, it was the fact that fetish element was, you know, front and center and celebrated. Yeah, which is quite cool.
Was that confronting?
Not really, not for me.
Hello. Was that confronting to the average punter on the street?
For the average punter, no. I think for the average German, it wouldn't have been. There was
the average punter on Australian street. I mean, the Germans have this whole Freierkultur, Körperkultur, which is all about being naked, and there's no problem with that. There's no shame in it.
Yes.
Whatever you look like, age, and so forth. And they're very open, and they very much embrace nudity with no sense of shame. And that's very German cultural thing, and good for them.
Yep.
We don't. We recoil in horror if anybody is just showing an inch of skin that shouldn't be shown from a body fascist point of view.
Absolutely. No, I think for the average Australian punter that would, you know, be heading over there, yes, be forewarned that you're going to see a few things that you wouldn't see at, say, Sydney Mardi Gras.
And what do you see?
What did I see? Well, I did get quite a good shot of a fellow in a dog mask type outfit with a leash. I got a good photo of him out at the street festival. So that,
oh, bless.
Yes. That would be, a good example of some of the things that we came across stumbling through the streets at the Gay and Lesbian Festival in Berlin.
So we did Tel Aviv and Berlin. What were the other stops on the trip?
The other stops on the trip, again, not so much hitting the timelines for the official Pride festivities. Stockholm, Lisbon, Amsterdam, and we stopped in Hong Kong on the way across too. Yeah.
And your favorite?
Wow. Actually, my favorite would have been Tel Aviv. I didn't really know what to expect. I had good feedback from some Israeli friends and things like that it was a must see. But I was struck by how open and accepting to both gays and even women and all the just the general vibe in Tel Aviv. I mean, Tel Aviv is
very secular.
Yes, it's very much in its own bubble than the rest of Israel.
It is.
Yeah, Jerusalem not so secular.
No.
No, there will be no women wailing at the wall in Jerusalem.
Yeah, well, there's a distinct sort of, you know, there's
although
the women's
I love
side
Jerusalem.
And the men's side. Yeah, it's a beautiful spot. It was good. Having grown up Catholic, it was interesting.
There's a bit of history.
Yeah, just a little.
did you do the Via Della Rosa?
Yeah, we went through and did the Stations of the Cross and all the bits and pieces.
See, I was Protestant. We only had one station.
There you go.
Cut through the middleman.
There's a bit for every... it's interesting how many claims on that area, different, you know, sects of religion, different bits and pieces that are... Everyone's got a claim, so it was interesting to see that perspective.
Yeah. And did you really enjoy the community support aspect of the Tel Aviv Pride then? The fact that everyone
Absolutely.
Did get involved? How did that feel? Was it...
It felt awesome. I mean, it was just to see how many people... Because the parade itself, there were probably tens of thousands of people, so quite a large event. But then to get down to Gordon Beach and see just... Because they do have a permanent gay beach across from the Hilton, I believe, on the beach in Tel Aviv. But they literally took over the entire... the majority of the beach area sort of across from the CBD. So it was it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow. So Shabbat Shalom to our Hebrew Mishpucha today. It's, of course, being the Shabbos. I don't know how many people will be listening, but there is a Aleph Pride. If there are Jewish listeners who are interested in being involved in a gay group, you can contact the Joy Switchboard for more information. So after Israel, where'd you go?
After Israel, we went to Stockholm.
And was that your first trip to Stockholm?
Look at Joe light up with her Eurovision connections sparkling all around her.
Oh, it's just ABBA all over again. Had you been to Stockholm previously?
Hadn't, no. So it's stunning. And everyone is impeccably dressed. And it's just, it's a very, very interesting corner of the globe.
Is that because you think they have very organized wardrobes?
Perhaps. Yeah. Yes. Very pedantic about, colors and hangers and whatnot, no doubt.
And shoe racks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a stunning part. We went up to the archipelago, and it's just a beautiful part of the world.
And how was it in terms of price? Because a lot of times I think we feel, and we often think, that Scandinavia is a little bit pricier than perhaps other parts of Europe.
Yes.
And what was your take?
I concur. Yeah, it was quite. And actually, Tel Aviv was remarkably expensive as well. Yeah, to start with those two destinations nearly broke the bank. So, but yeah. It is a bit pricey, so you need to up the budget if you're headed to that corner of Europe.
Well, while everybody goes home to raid their piggy banks, it's 12 minutes past 2. You're on Joy 94.9. This is the Escape Pod. Dave.
Yes.
Talk to us about some difficult travel destinations.
Some difficult travel destinations. Well, I mean, it's one, I suppose, that's been in the news lately is Russia, in terms of the strife LGBT communities experiencing at the moment, based on some changes to law relating to showing, same-sex affection and teaching children about homosexuality and all these sorts of bits and pieces. So... because I'm a professional traveler, aka travel agent in profession, do we have, a large number of, LGBT clients requesting to go to destinations like Russia and Saudi Arabia? No.
Have you had people change their plans because they were going to go? I mean, something like the Trans-Siberian Railway journey or something is a very popular experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's more... a matter of, I suppose, managing expectations and educating clients on what they need to be across in terms of, I mean, it's like anything. It's very unfortunate that these sort of mentalities still exist in these countries. But at the same time, I mean, that there are cultural differences in different destinations you go, different things you have to be wary of. We're not in Australia, when you're abroad. So there's things you have to keep an eye out for. So it's a similar situation where we just have to advise clients of these sorts of things and or they'll need to tone it down in certain instances. Yep.
Mm. It's a shame, but it is to embrace the entire world. We have to understand that we've got a very privileged position in this country and
Absolutely.
Like Canada, UK, most of Northern Europe,
yep.
most of Southern Europe, that we can be free and express ourselves. That's not the situation, and particularly you were saying Russia.
Yes.
Many people talk about how they manage going through places like Africa that has also some conservative views on same-sex partnerships.
Africa specifically, I haven't had any same-sex clients, partnered clients traveling through that particular area. I do have some colleagues, colleague of mine and his partner, they're traveling to Russia in the not so distant future. So I'm interested to get their perspective on, you know, minute differences or changes that they, because they're quite open and proud. Right. So it'll be interesting to see how they go and what sort of changes to their disposition and you know, in terms of bedding arrangements and things like that, what sort of choices they needed to make.
Because Uganda just recently was making the news in their legal appreciation of same-sex couples and how little they have of it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, that would be one. I mean, places like Saudi and Russia, I mean, the official stance from a government perspective is to LGBT travelers just not to even go there. To travelers, I would, you know, proceed with caution would be my sort of advice. But somewhere like those sorts of places in Africa, it'd be just don't even go there. It'd be, it's just not worth it.
I guess if anybody's listening and they have a question that they'd like to put to Dave about travelling safely or an experience, by all means do email us at onair@joy.org.au. Dave, to flip it around just a little bit, what are some of the most popular destinations at the moment with the same-sex community that you're finding? Is it people wanting to rush over to the UK and get married, or are they going across the ditch into New Zealand? What are the top requests?
Probably the top requests. I mean, look, to be honest, I mean, I suppose we're just like any other clients that are looking for travel, so there is quite a diversity of destinations that they're choosing. But things like, you know, heading to the Greek islands and things like that, heading over to Europe or to North America for some of the Pride events, Vancouver, Toronto, New York, you know, even Los Angeles, those sorts of bits and pieces, people will head over there to partake as well. So, yeah, in terms of clients specifically heading to a destination for those sorts of festivities, that would be sort of the main one that comes to mind. Yeah, just getting to partake themselves.
And let's hope there's a lot more honeymoons.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. So, you know, Thailand and the Maldives and all those sorts of bits and pieces, those, regardless of the gender arrangement in the couple, those are some of the top destinations for honeymoon getaways. Yeah.
And Mark, you've just come back from the States. Did you participate in any of the Pride events while you were there?
No, I didn't have the opportunity to. I mean, Chicago at the time, I think I missed it by a couple of weeks or something. I might be corrected on when it was. To be honest, I didn't really look into the Pride festivities in great detail. I mean, I went to gay districts while I was there, and that's where I prefer to stay when I'm overseas. But yes, I've never really sort of thought to actually make a trip just for a Pride destination. But the more that Dave talks about it,
it's good fun.
The more I may want to.
Definitely.
And how do you cope with the crowds, though, Dave? Because that is obviously something that you would have to be willing to take on board, is that you are going to a destination that had been advertising itself around the world to the community, come to us for these 3 days.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How does that impact on just accommodation arrangements and forward planning?
All the rest of it. Yeah. Again, it's managing expectations, and that's partially the reason why we didn't necessarily hit Pride events in every single destination we had on this holiday, is because it is full on. It's good fun, but it can be quite draining, like you said, fighting the crowds and just the sheer pace of those events. I mean, let's face it, they're big parties. So if you can kind of, I liked what we did in the sense that we did a couple intermittently and then had quieter destinations just to sort of relax and chill sort of in between. So that would be a definite recommendation to sort of pace yourselves in terms of the destinations if you're planning on doing several. The other thing, like you said, forward planning would be critical. So the sooner you can get on to booking flights and accommodation and those sorts of bits and pieces for those busy times, the more likely you are to be to not miss out on, or, you know, if things, availability getting dried up, things like that. So,
and are you thinking sort of 6 months out, 12 months out? What would you recommend?
The earlier the better. I mean, in terms of airfares drop into the system generally about 10 months outside of when you're actually headed to the destination. So that would be a good time to get on to early bird specials and things like that. For instance, looking at the European season next year, the early bird specials are just starting to be released. October, November is when there's another couple waves of them. And then for the accommodation for peak destinations, you'll want to get onto it as soon as possible. The other thing to bear in mind is during those real peak periods for festivals and things like that, they might expect full payment and things like that. So you'll have to just be in a position to the early part bird gets
with the
worm.
Cash.
That's
yeah.
it. Yep.
But we don't need to just talk about that today. We've got Brisbane.
We do. I was lucky enough to receive an invitation from my sister and my niece and my nephew to attend a fifth birthday party as the entertainment director last week, which was why when I spoke to you last Saturday, I think I must have sounded a little bit zoned out. I'd been doing my Martha Stewart impersonation of making 500 petals of tissue paper to make a floral arrangement for the centrepiece of the fairy dell.
Now, you say that as if none of our Joy listeners weren't doing the exact same thing at that exact same time.
I do say that. I think I may have been the only person who was recreating a Tinkerbell fairy dell on the decking in Brisvagnus, but that was definitely what I was doing. So the fifth birthday party went very well. And I didn't get a lot of time to get out and about in Brisbane because the focus was the preparation of the birthday party. And I'm sure all of the aunts and uncles, mums and dads out there know just how time-consuming it is to create the perfect set for your little darling's birthday theme.
And how did you paraphrase this event before?
There were 15 fairies and there was one Spider-Man.
Hmm.
Yes.
So
Dante
the only
the
one
Spider-Man.
Having that weekend last weekend.
Quite true, although I was concerned because I thought that Dante should have been a mutant teenage ninja turtle, not a Spider-Man. But maybe I've just
You're
got
talking about
it
Dante the kid or the author or the turtle?
The poet. No, oh. I was talking about the child.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, exactly. But I did get out to see a new bakery. Well, it's not so new. It's called Brew Bakers, and it's in Albion, and Albion is becoming hipster central. Mm. It's like you've gone into Abbotsford.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, very much. All the buildings are black and white. It's very cool.
Oh, so it's more like Collingwood.
Boom Tish, yes. Point to you, maybe a little bit like Collingwood, but gorgeous bread. So if you do happen to be up in Brisbane anytime soon, I would definitely head to Brew Bakers for their sourdough. It's as good as the sourdough from Poylaine in Paris, in my opinion, humble as that may be. What does everyone else think about Brisbane?
Mark.
Hey, we just talked about this. I haven't got much experience in Brisbane. I mean, it was a stopping point to get to Cairns. In fact, did I say that right? Cairns.
Cairns.
Yeah, yeah, there's a big film festival there.
Boom, boom.
I'm the one meant to be mispronouncing the names.
Yeah. I love how the travel show has turned into Comedy Central. Because it's 23 minutes to three.
We're using inverted commas when we talk about Comedy Central, though,
yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, where's that John Stewart when we need him? So, Canadian Dave, have you been to Brisbane?
I have. My head office for my employer is in Brisbane, so I sort of have work associations with it. But, I mean, one of the things that are the stereotypes that I've come across for Queensland in general, Brisbane included, is a lack of sort of food and wine culture as compared to, you know, here where that's very much the case. But I found quite the contrary. We went to some nice restaurants, all of which names elude me because it was over a year ago. But yeah, so that sort of smashed that preconception for me. So I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, it's a very old stereotype. Brisbane has moved on significantly in a very short period of time. And I think over the last 10 to 15 years has turned into a completely different city than it was. But, you know, mud sticks and people like to throw the mud around. They say that about Adelaide and Perth and every other city in Australia. We seem to disrespect our sister cities in this country.
We do. Although I've just had a text that came in that said, we like Brisbane.
Oh.
That was from my sister and my and my niece and my nephew who's just said, we like Brisbane. But, you know, Dave, I think you're onto something. I think in Melbourne and people who I know who've emigrated to this beautiful city say that we obsess about food. And these are people who are both in and out of the tourism and hospitality industry. And they're amazed at Melbourne's obsession with it. I think in Brisbane, of course they love good food and good wine, but they have a climate, I think, that perhaps allows them to obsess a little bit more about the body beautiful. And I would definitely think that that's probably something that is number one on their list is being out and about, exercising, outdoor activities, their tracks and trails. Outdoor rec is a big part of Brisbane. And the food, I think, comes along as the fuel.
Yes.
So what you're saying is we're all just consuming and they're all burning it off, is that?
I think that could be true. that could be accurate.
I can't really argue with that at all.
I can see there's something in that.
Mark, what's your experience of Brisbane?
I really enjoyed it, actually. I've got some friends up there. I've been up there for work. And Brizzy was one of those towns that, I mean, it didn't thrill me like Amsterdam or, you know, a lot of other places, but I don't think you can expect that of Brisbane. But I really enjoyed it. The people are really friendly. I was telling you before that I was walking down Queen Street Mall and I saw a round rack with black jackets on it that said, "Straight from Melbourne," on it, which I found very amusing. It's like, I don't really think that's a benchmark city. It's not on a cologne bottle like Paris, London, New York, but I enjoy the fact that it was there. But yeah, everyone who lives there seems to be very happy. A lot of people have moved to Melbourne from Brisbane because they seek a different lifestyle than what's on offer, and a lot of people from Melbourne have moved up very happily. I know a huge amount of people from Sydney who have moved up to Brisbane because of prices and costs and work availability and lifestyle choices, and they're very, very happy in Brisbane. It's a great town, it really is, and it's not what it was in the 80s when the Commonwealth Games were there with that big winking kangaroo.
That was before I was born.
Me too. I got the History Channel.
But is it a retirement destination as well?
Not anymore.
Or is it more Gold Coast? Or
I think the Gold Coast, you'd have to say it is.
Yeah. Right. And Noosa.
What was that?
Noosa.
Sunshine.
And places, Maroochydore, kind of places where they've had large scale high rise developments and you can have a 4-bedroom, you know, half a floor place. I think that's retirement. Yeah. Bit like, you know, it's Florida. But on the Gold Coast,
right,
kind of thing.
Of course.
Yeah. Whereas Brisbane, I think, is, you know, it's more culturally focused and obviously after the floods they've had to do a lot of infrastructure rebuild.
Yeah, if you're a Brisbanian or Brisvegan, whatever they're called, if you're from Brisbane and you'd like to talk to us about it and tell us how wonderful your hometown is, let us know. 0427JOY949 by SMS, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au and proclaim your love for our northernmost capital. And if you don't like it, keep it to yourself. I think we're going to do that. We're going to take a policy that we're going to love each other's cities in this crazy brown land.
Spreading the love today.
Yeah. Yep. Adelaide's got great food. Perth has got great food and wine.
Yes.
Adelaide's got awesome wine. Well, Barossa Valley.
McLaren.
What about Hobart? Yeah, we haven't mentioned Hobart.
No, Hobart is a phenomenal, especially for organic and green stuff. We actually did talk about Tassie the other week. I think when you were away.
When I was fly fishing?
Were you wading around?
I was wading around, but I wasn't wading in Tasmania. I was wading in Millbrook, which is in Gordon, just south of Ballarat.
Okay. So when will we again see you wandering around the waterways in your chest-high
In my
pads?
Fishing gear?
Yeah.
Well, the trout season opens next weekend here in Victoria, so that means that you can actually trout stream fishing, as opposed to lake fishing, which is what I was doing. So I think, you know, give me a couple of months, maybe into late November, and you might see me out there catching a rainbow trout or a brown trout if I'm lucky.
Ripping the mouth out of a fish. You're enjoying 94.9.
And in the Escape Pod today, we have Canadian Dave, Mark, and Joe. I love saying that.
There are two Marks.
That's right. There's two Marks. It's not someone called Mark or Marky Mark. No.
No, there's no mini me. It's just Mark, Dave, and Joe. And I thought we really should talk about some of the technology advances that are happening in travel. I know we do have Victorian Tourism Week coming up, but
thrill us all with what's coming up at the pointy end of technology.
Well, Virgin America, you know, Richard Branson just loves to get into everybody's head. And he's had an extension on Virgin America's red in-flight entertainment system. And there's now a seat-to-seat delivery mechanism whereby you can send a free drink or a snack to another seat.
I love this, I have to say. I mean, not just because it's technology.
Was this because you were the recipient of a lot of free drinks?
No, if only. That would be.
Or a miscellaneous snack.
Is there a double entendre in that?
No. First time, no.
But no, the great thing, I mean, Virgin's got a great brand of, you know, sexiness, I guess, or sassiness. Right. But what they're doing is using technology to achieve that. And that's kind of cool.
Do you think they're keeping the customer satisfied?
Well, depends on the how many messages get through. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of I think that the idea of being able to send other people drinks or whatever in the flight is a nice way to anonymize it in a way, because I find that technology, you're kind of more inclined to do something on a computer in front of you or a device in front of you compared to, say, asking a hostess, you know, can you send something to that person? Like, if it's something, an option that's offered on the screen in your face, you know, you might be sort of bored and browsing around. You're more inclined to use that than what you would be to actually use it in a sort of a more person-to-person kind of way.
But bearing in mind the configuration of where the majority of passengers are sitting, which is in coach or the economy cabin, the main cabin,
yes.
How much can they actually turn around to see the person that they might like to send the drink to? Or am I just...
Because if you're sending a drink and the person's in front of you, you're going to spend the rest of your flight just looking, staring at them, waiting for them to turn around. I mean, that's kind of a bit freaky, right? So
the eyes drilling into the back of your head.
But you're not precluded from actually getting up out of your chair and saying, hey, thanks for the drink, right? I mean, or you could use the chat system, of course, that they've already had for quite some time now, right?
Yeah.
Dave, have you had any experience with that?
Not any anonymous or unsolicited chats, but I have used it to message between mates on the plane that we didn't get to sit together, so that it's good for that little trick
mates
as well.
Mates on a plane.
Wouldn't it be
these mother...
Guys, wouldn't it be better to actually spend money on making a system possible so you could sit together with your friends?
That would be good too.
Well, there's been other, I can't remember if it was Virgin or other airlines, where they're actually offering a service during checkout, buying the ticket, I should say, where you can connect with people through Facebook that have similar likes to your own and stuff like that. Like, there's more sort of a social media. That scares me a little bit because it means they're getting access to a whole bunch of information that they you know, about
shouldn't
people.
Have.
And I would be inclined to not use that simply because I don't want, you know, some random airline wherever knowing all those things about me. Even though they probably have ways of getting to that information anyway.
Like, who you're sending drinks to.
Well, that's one thing, right? There's a whole other bunch of things that perhaps I don't want them knowing.
Hmm.
So tell us all on the radio, what are these things?
What are these things?
That you want to keep undivulged?
I have spent many, many a time talking about these things on my other show, Techno Gaze. So.
Speaking of things you wouldn't want people to know, if I may.
Yeah, your recent browsing history?
No, I'm actually thinking that we might just take our little escape pod over to Singapore.
Yes.
Ooh, love
now,
Singapore.
We do. We all love Singapore. Now, in Singapore, there's a fairly famous nightclub called Zonk. Z-O-N-K. And Zonk, in conjunction with DDB, the large advertising agency, have come up with a urine analyzer.
So, sounds like a great night out.
So what happens is, when not a problem, when you arrive by a car, you hand over your car keys to the valet, and in return, the valet will give you an RFID tag.
Right.
Which, Mark, you know what that is?
Yeah, it's just a way of identifying you, really. Yeah,
so exactly.
It's like a way of saying, hey, this is like a receipt. Yep.
Exactly. And then if during the evening you go to the bathroom and use the urinal, they have a device there that is going to detect your blood alcohol limit.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
For what end?
To not give you back your car keys.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Now, has anyone, you know, have you all read the book 1984? Are we kind of heading that direction?
Well, there's another place in, I think it's in Belgium, in Brussels, where they actually make you have a breathalyzer test before they'll let you go back to the car park to get your car at the nightclub.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is, I mean, it's up there with a little bit Big Brother.
Yeah.
Because they've got the little breathalyzer machines. Some of them sort of more so on the novelty side, but they've had those around for a while in clubs and things like that, just to check where you're.
Yeah, but no one's actually refused to give you your keys back. I mean, this is
true.
Like,
this is taking it to the next level.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I guess you do choose to actually go to the bar in the first place, so you're opting into it essentially. You're not. It's not like, you know,
correct.
You're not going. You're prevented from doing stuff.
Should you be coaching, or should you be guiding a friend who is that out of control, that they need to have a urine test to get their keys back? Maybe you can just say, tonight we're going for a walk. We're not going to Zonk. You're not going to drink a bottle of Chirac and then try and drive yourself home and knock over a few pedestrians on the way. We're just going to go for a trot around the park.
Yeah.
Or something else that doesn't involve alcoholism. Because you're being an enabler, aren't you? No?
Well,
I'd love to hear what other people think.
We do. We have someone who's SMS in, which is Michael from Elstonwick. And Michael has said, it's creepy getting an in-flight drink from an admirer. In a bar, you can walk out. Where do you go at 30,000 feet if you don't like the giver?
Very true.
Hand me my parachute. Good,
yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
So
What do you do?
Well, Richard Branson obviously has an answer.
Look, I think, well, particularly in the American domestic flight market, it is, I mean, this is a bit gimmicky, this bit, but I mean, the saturation of that market, they do need little bits and pieces, little extras, little value adds to really stand out in the market, like in because pricing and all that is so similar, they're going to need these sort of fashion forward ideas to try and stand out from the pack. So it does that.
Hmm. Well, that was the industry briefing from
Dave. It is food for thought, isn't it? Can I send someone a tipple while they're sitting there strapped in?
The point as well is if it's based on the existing system that they've got for chatting, you can always just say, no, I'm going to flat out decline all chat. So if you start getting inundated with these requests, then you can kind of say no, I guess. No,
you can say I'm a Seventh-day Adventist and I don't drink.
That's right. That might make you more attractive to some people, but hey.
There you go.
Or we could lady bump.
We could.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.